Always Hole into Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Nathan McKenzie, Tim Miller, Jazzette Maja, Chris Fuchs, Thomas Navin, Joe McIndo, Steve Rogers, Cavante Chillis, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, John Lloyd, Justin Maitner, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Becca Zeifel, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Dylan D'Antonio, Tom Gerke, T. Hamill, Nicholas Casso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Braden Arnold, Mariana Sachi, Alana Gibbs, Darren Kirsch, Catherine, Rachel Miller, Casey Cochran, and Kathleen Holland. Thank you so much to all these patrons. And you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.
I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hold to Smallville, Patreon edition. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and welcome everyone to our second level 33.1. And we have our sole resident of level 33.1. He's back, Mr. Nathan McKenzie. What's up, Nathan?
Hey, Zach. Nice to be here again. Being the sole member, but I'm just grateful to be here with you again.
Oh, man, you earned it, buddy. Nathan is our top patron. So that's what, when you're on level 33.1, you get to have your own show with me. The patrons will get the show early, but you guys will get on the main feed, too. So that's what you get, man, when you are a member of level 33.1. So, if anyone would like to join Nathan, because he's lonely over there, you can go to our Patreon at patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S and have yourself a level 33.1 show with me as well. But, you know, Nathan, you're an animated Superman guy, right? So we were talking about, what should we talk about? You know, what should we talk about on these episodes? And we're like, you know what? There's a lot of Superman animated movies that we can talk about, right?
Yeah, there certainly is. Like I told in the previous episode that we had together, I always wanted to talk about Superman in some shape or form, but obviously Smallville was taken. Lois and Clark was taken. So I went to my back of my brain and just thought, okay, I'll go on the animated side of things. So, yep, our last episode we talked about the Superman the Animated Series, a little bit of Justice League and the like, but now we're going to go into the animated side of the movie house. We'll start off with the first one in the DCAU being Superman Doomsday.
Yeah, so this was a series, I believe it started in 2007. So when they launched these, like, direct-to-video, there's a lot of different terminologies for this. It's like the DC Animated Universe original movie, and there's da-da-da-da-da. So it's all these acronyms, all these letters. I call the Bruce Timverse, like, the DCAU. I think that's, like, the accepted term, right? The DC Animated Universe, right? And so that's its own thing. Now, these are also sometimes called the DCAU movies, which is complicated because they have nothing to do with that. Those are outside of continuity, although there is a lot of crossover sometimes in the voice actors, which we'll talk about, which is interesting. So we decided there's a lot of these, okay? So the way I see it is, like, if I divided these things up, they started in 07, and they went for a good, you know, 5 or 6 years straight before the New 52. As far as the films coming out, because the New 52 came out and the films were still coming out the way they were. And then eventually they did Justice League Flashpoint Paradox, right? And that's where they introduced the New 52 into this line of films, and they started to have a bit of continuity. Before that, it was all just one-offs. Sometimes there were sequels. We'll talk about that, you know. But there was probably about a dozen. And, you know, about half of them were Superman movies, you know, which is great because, this is post-Superman Returns, pre-Man of Steel. So there was nothing Superman going on other than Smallville, right? So it was a great opportunity to see some Superman stuff that we'd always wanted to see. And Batman, obviously, had gotten a lot of animated movies from the DCAU, so he was kind of covered. Now, Superman had Brainiac Attacks, and one day we'll talk about that, but that's infamously just this horrible animated movie that's kind of connected to the Superman the Animated Series. So, but all that to say, we're going to talk about the Superman movies from the pre-New 52 series of these, because I feel like there is a, and have you watched a lot of these? Have you watched all these?
When they first started coming out, I was pretty religious, and every time they came out, yep, buy it, watch it, and go from there. But of late, probably since the Justice League War came out, it's probably I think the only movies I've actually bought is probably the Death and Return of Superman, like that duo. But Yeah, I've lost a lot of interest in the actual movies itself probably since Bruce Timm's probably gone away from it. It's one of those things that I suppose that, it was still relevant back at, when they first came out in 07, just the fact that the Justice League Unlimited series had gone off the air for probably about 3 years, and then bringing these back was almost like bringing you back to those, even though it was a different storylines and stuff like that. But as you said, they did bring back some of the voice acting and stuff like that. And some of the movies you could almost say were almost like a direct sequel. Like when we talk about Doomsday, it almost feel like that lines in with the animated series in a way, but obviously not in a direct contract. So
yeah, I'm the same way. I was religiously buying them. I own the majority of these on DVD, and then when the New 52 started, I didn't really get into it as much and just kind of faded away from it. So like I look at it as like the New 52 and the pre-New 52, and we're talking about the pre-New 52 and we're talking about the Superman movies that are in there, and we think next time we'll kind of pick up the other movies that Superman's in but aren't necessarily Superman movies, because we looked at the list, I'm like, that's a lot. And we want to do them all at once. So we'll kind of, just general thoughts and flyovers. We'll see where the conversation takes us. We'll keep it kind of loose around here, but we are going to do it in order of release. So the first one would be to Superman Doomsday, which is a misleading title, because it's just to get off the top, right? I think overall it's fine. I think it's fine. It's a fine, average, slightly above average Superman animated movie, but it's certainly not the death and life of Superman. So far to the fact they just remade it, right? They're like, well, we didn't do that very well, because Doomsday is barely in this movie, right? And I think it's, as an adaptation of the death and life of Superman, it's a fail. But as like its own one-off direct-to-video animated adventure, I think it's fine.
Yeah, I totally. Reading The Death of Superman, I actually read the whole thing from start to go probably a couple of years ago again. And yeah, as you just pointed out, they brought out the new animated movies last year. And you can definitely tell that, Doomsday was not in it for very long. One thing I'll say about this movie, though, is that the opening score I thought was amazing. I think when they actually, it's definitely when James Marsden talks as Lex Luthor at the start of the movie, I thought that was pretty cool. And they brought in the score. I thought that was pretty cool. I thought that is an awesome Superman score. And funnily enough, they use that score again later on in another Superman movie.
They do. Yeah, that's the one that they kind of tied. I made a note of that when I was watching Superman versus the Elite. I was like, that sounds familiar. And I looked up, as the same guy scoring them both. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you watched it, did you find it was very similar to the animation side of things, what they did previously? Or do you think they tried to go off to a new level?
Yeah, this was more or less a slightly different take on the animated series style. Like, if you weren't really paying attention, you could think that this was the animated series. They draw a couple extra lines on Superman's face. Lex Luthor's a little more like slim, but other than that, like, all the character designs are extremely similar to Superman the animated series, because this is like the first thing they've done since then, so they're trying to keep that continuity. Now as they move forward in the movies, they try to adapt the animation style of the original stories, which is an interesting take in itself, in order to kind of give these all their own identity. So I don't know, like that creates a lot of kind of like murky water of like, what is this? Is this a sequel? Is this so I don't know if that was the right approach for this, but it's what people were used to for, we're talking, 10, 15 years at this point, right? So that's, I understand why they did it that way, huh?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think that's the reason why they probably did it, that animation style, just so people are familiar with it and stuff like that. Especially some of the storylines, they base it off the death and life of Superman. But one thing that got to me was, reminded me back to one of the episodes when it was the clone of Superman, and he did that in the animated series as well. The clone of Superman was turned into Bizarro.
Very, very similar with all the bodies and the tubes. Yeah, totally. Very similar.
But there's one particular scene after you see the clone, he takes out a Toy Man from the back of the police car, and he flies up and then just drops him. Like, that's pretty I don't think we saw anything like that in the animated series. So, yeah, that was pretty dark.
And these all are dark, because they're all PG-13, so they can be a little more edgy. They throw in some profanity, like, hey, guys, we can curse now. We see some blood, And, yeah, you would never – and Toy Man is – like, they don't really say it, but he's, like, implied to be, a pedophile here, Just the way he, looks and stuff and the kids. I mean, and that's kind of – that was not the character from the animated show, but, they go to dark places with this stuff. And, yeah, Clone Superman just kills the guy. And that's the thing. That there's a – this is not the death and life of Superman. This is a story where Superman dies and Lex Luthor clones Superman, and Superman has to come back and fight this clone, which is, again, standalone. It's an interesting take on the thing, like, but don't call it Doomsday. You know, I don't know what you're supposed to call it. You know, that sells copies, and I mean, this was very popular back in the day. That launched this whole. We wouldn't be talking about all these movies if this one wasn't successful, right? But I think that's an interesting plot line there. And I really like a lot of the most entertaining stuff is when like clone Superman is like starting to like think for himself and do his own thing. And it kind of reminds me of Christopher Reeve in Superman 3 when he's like being, you know, evil Superman. Right. But probably my favorite scene in this whole movie is when he saves the cat from the tree, which is itself a reference to Superman the movie, right? They even draw the street the same, you know? I'm like, this is just, somebody just framed, like traced this from the movie, right? And she saves this old, the clone Superman saves this cat from a tree and gives it to this old lady. And he's like, you know how many people I could have saved when I was helping with these little, you know, these little things like this? And she's like, oh, well, don't blame Mittens. He's like, well, I don't blame the cat. I blame you. And it's just like, it's really unsettling because, you know, Superman has already killed a guy at this point. Mm-hmm. Right. And he's like, what is he going to, he's stroking this cat. He's like intimidating this poor old lady. You're like, oh, my God, it's very uncomfortable. And it's very effective. And when he starts to say, I believe I know what's best for Metropolis. And like, you could see what Superman, without his sense of morality, would turn into, and that's the whole point of this clone, because Lex, he only has what Lex Luthor programmed into him. So I feel like that was a very interesting, because every Superman story has this, right? Like you said, Bizarro, yep. Right? There's episodes of every Superman TV show of the thing, like Lois and Clark did it, you know, Lex Luthor has a Superman under his control. What did you think of that whole story like? Because I thought that was probably the strongest part of it.
I think you're on top, you're all over it with regards to the fact that they definitely... They told the storyline, even though it was very similar to what they've done in the past, but they told it a different way. So we haven't seen that version of Superman before, I suppose, compared to, like you said, Lois and Clark and Superman the Animated Series. And just the fact that he's got his own moral ground, like he still believes he's a good guy, he's doing the right thing, but he's just obviously going to that next level to get the job done, which is the one thing Superman will never go to. He knows his moral values are what he has to do to save somebody, but... As we all know, they keep coming back and they keep doing the same thing. It's the same with Batman. You know, he'll never kill the Joker, so to speak, but he always comes back out of prison. But leading into, there's a couple of things I wanted to talk about with this movie again as well. So the end scene is when, you know, the way that he kills the clone with the kryptonite and then the rock lands on him. It's like, how many times has Superman obviously lived through a kryptonite crisis?
Right.
It's just like, okay, so the clone dies from that, but yet Superman will always get up and walk again. So did you find that as well in the scene? Or
yeah, because there's like this tar or something around that allows it to stick to him, so he sticks a piece of kryptonite to him and he flattens him. It's like, okay. I mean, like, and to think that our Superman, the good Superman, right, he comes back and hey, we get to see the black costume and the long hair. Yep. Which is something we're still waiting to see that in live action, right? Still, yep. But so it's like, it's good to see that because that's the visual language from the comics, and they had that final fight, and it was a pretty good final fight.
Yep.
But yeah, that was like, especially because I think that's what I was getting at. Our Superman, the good Superman, is like at what, 60%
yep.
strength?
Yep.
And this clone's at 100% and he still beats him? It's like, okay.
How did you find the voice acting in this? The fact that, yeah, we've gone away from the original casting of animated series in Justice League, like Adam Baldwin as Superman and Anne Hesh as Lois Lane, and Brainiac from Smallville as Lex Luthor.
Yes.
How did you find that?
Yeah, Adam Baldwin is actually really good as Superman.
Yeah.
And Anne Hesh is fine as Lois Lane. Like, again, these voices are just different enough. You could be like, are these the animated series guys? Because, like, in Justice League, Rick, it's George Newbern, but in Superman the Animated Series, it's Tim Daly, and they sound very similar. And Adam Baldwin just sounds like another guy in that same line. Like he's not Adam Baldwin. You know, if people don't know who he is, he's Jane from Firefly. He's usually a big tough guy. So he has a more like quiet strength to him in this, and I think he did a real good job. But James Marsters, like Brainiac from Smallville, right? As Lex, it's interesting because obviously he had been on Smallville before this.
Yeah,
you know, as Brainiac, and this is 07, you know. And he would be on again after this. But I think he is really good as Lex Luthor. It's funny to hear him say Lex Luthor because you think about, you know, Smallville. Yep. But his performance is really great. And I love the character Lex in this as well because it shows him just being, you know, Lex Corp Lex. He's wearing the all white,
yep.
Which is influenced by President Lex, I would think, you know, from Smallville. But he's like one of the scenes with Mercy Gray, she's like, she's like, hey, what are you doing over there? Got the cure for cancer? He's like, no, the cure for this. We need to slow this down. So he has all these cures to all these diseases that could help the world, but in order to make a profit, he's not sharing them.
Yep.
And I'm like, that is so like evil Lex Luthor, right? And to your point about being hardcore, straight up kills Mercy Graves, shoots her in the head. Hardcore.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a different take. And I think it was a good start. And like you said, I don't think if you rated it out of 10, I wouldn't, I'd probably maybe a 6 or a 7 out of 10, or in your grade scale, probably a B minus or a C plus. I don't know. It's very hard to judge of that first, because the movie itself I thought was great, but after seeing everything else and also the fact that adaptation from the actual comic book, it's like, okay, the story was good, but it could have been better.
Yeah, I didn't really think of these in letter grades, to be honest. I guess I would probably say a B minus or even a B, because yep. I remember, like, I will judge this off of what I thought back in the day when I saw these and what I thought now,
yep.
And I liked this one better than I remember,
yep.
To be honest. I mean, like even, like, the fights, you know, the very, like, the Superman Doomsday fight, it's very influenced by Superman 2.
Yep.
I think, again, like, it's like they watch the Superman movies, and they're like, all right, what kind of stuff can we do? Like, they go underground, he goes through a building, there's a, you know, a cola sign.
Yep.
That one like gets thrown through at some point, you know. There's the in joke about the giant mechanical spider.
Yep.
They have Kevin Smith in there, like, oh, it's more than a giant mechanical spider. You know, yep. That's a whole in joke about Superman Lives. Yep. So there's a lot of awareness here, and you know, there is the one theme of like protect the people. That's why I'm here, right? Because even Superman and even the clone says that. So I liked how that mirrored itself,
yep.
And there is a lot of humor in this too, like yep. With Lois and with the robots. When she's trying to get him to tell him he's Clark, you know, and he's like, he also goes by Kal-El. Yep. Like, that was hilarious. That was a really funny line there. And then finally, I guess I said the cat scene, and we'll wrap it up here. Yep. But my other favorite scene is the scene when Lois goes to see Martha after yep. Superman's died. And Martha's really like, who are you? Because she thinks Lois Lane's here to get a scoop yep. on her son. And like, even the way they animate it, like, it's all like at a touch angle and all seriousness. And then when Lois starts, like, pouring her heart out, it, like, softens, it gets normal, and Martha's like, oh, well, come here. And I thought that was a really effective emotional scene where you actually really felt for Superman's loss there.
Yeah, it was very emotional, that scene. And because you just saw at the end of the, I think it was the funeral, when, you know, Lois, being the reporter that she is, you saw Martha in the background going, well, that's pretty unusual for her to come all the way from Smallville, knowing who she is. So, you know, in the back of her brain, she knows what's going on, but the fact that she confronted Martha in that way, Martha! In that way. and yeah, it was a beautiful part of that movie, yeah.
Because they made it a thing, like he hadn't told her he was Clark Kent yet, and yeah. At the very end, he puts on the glasses, yeah. And she's like, oh, Clark, and so anyway, there you have it. But yeah, I think, you know, I in retrospect, I liked it more than when I saw it the first time, but I knew what to expect. I knew not to expect the death of Superman,
yeah.
And that's helpful when you watch this particular one. So moving on to our next film, then, Superman, Batman, Public Enemies. Did you read this series back in the day?
I didn't. Funnily enough, it is actually behind me.
It's actually behind me too, actually. Oh, is it? it's I think right there, because I made it a point to buy every single graphic novel.
Oh, okay, yep.
Of this, because I love Jeff Loeb.
Yep.
And I love the first few arcs in here. And then, of course, he leaves the book after a while. But I was like, you know what? Superman, Batman, these are my two favorite comic characters. I'm gonna buy every single one. So I have the whole series. So
yeah, I went through the same stage when I was living somewhere else. I used to go to a comic book shop every weekend, and every graphic novel, I used to buy that. And I used to just love sitting there, like, you know, especially now the Red Sun's been turned into an animated movie next year. So that's very excited about that. And like, I know they told the Red Daughter series on Supergirl, obviously a completely different sort of thing, but it's good that they've brought that back into the light. So all these graphic novels, and that's what this whole these DCAU movies were. It's supposed to be an adaptation of our favorite comic books. And I thought, especially with the animation for this movie, it pretty much came straight from the pages of Jeff Loeb. You know, the animation, I thought, was basically completely different than what we've seen before.
Ed McGuinness was the artist, yep, on the book, and so they translate that exactly. And that kind of plays into all these look completely different for the most part, all these movies.
Yep. And yeah, you know, this, even though the storyline's completely, you know, nothing what we've seen before. You know, straight away, Lex Luthor is president. And you know, and those voice actors came back, you know, with, and the best thing is Tim Daly. Everyone forgets, you know, that Tim Daly and Kevin Conroy obviously worked together on Superman the Animated Series in The World's Finest. So it's not like they haven't worked together before, and those two have come back together, which was fantastic. And Clancy Brown back as Lex Luthor, which I thought was, you know, amazing. And just bringing that voice cast back definitely made more attention to the movie. There is obviously another voice actor that I don't know if you want to talk about her, but obviously it's Power Girl.
Yeah. So let's talk about the voice cast for a second. Like, it's interesting. So the last Superman Doomsday, last film, looked like the DCAU, but and even sounded a little bit like it, but doesn't like visually, you know, the more hardcore things like that. This one, of course, felt exactly like the DCAU because you had Clancy Brown, Kevin Conroy, and Tim Daly all coming back, right? As Lex, Batman, and Superman, and it looks completely different though. Was it odd for you to hear these voices and see like different animation? Because to me that was hard to kind of, because I know the Kevin Conroy Batman, I know how he looks and he doesn't look like this, right? To me that was a weird kind of to balance that.
It was a little bit different. The voice actors was, yeah, just listening to that, I thought it just made the movie to start with. But then you had to try and not think of it as you know, a DCAU animated TV show. You just had to think of it as a different story altogether. And especially as you start watching the series, and you know, you see Metallo, and you know that's not what Metallo looked like, and everything like that. And you know, so having all those voice actors was amazing. But you say, as long as you don't think about it as the TV show, then you'll love it as it is. And some of the other actors, you know, it's got, you know, LeVar Burton in there, a little bit of Black Lightning.
Yes, yes, LeVar Burton himself, Jordy LaForge. The guy from Reading Rainbow. Yes. But then, and you brought it up. Yes. Allison Mack is in this as Power Girl. I had forgotten this, Nathan. And I'm like watching the credits. I'm like, Allison Mack is in this. I'm like, oh my gosh, she's Power Girl. And it's crazy because you're watching it and it's interesting how actors perform differently in live action versus animation. She's like, I could really barely recognize her voice in this.
Yeah.
And it's funny because like all you hear for the most part, if you're guys like us, Tim Daly and Kevin Conroy, this is all you hear them do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's interesting to hear someone else do this and like have such a different approach than you hear them when they're in live action. But yeah, Black Lightning before he was famous, right, to the mainstream in this. Right? I mean, of course, he's been a huge character for decades, but you know, the TV show and the CW has really brought him into the mainstream eye. So it was interesting to see, of course, you know, LeVar Burton, right, as him. But yeah, I don't know what the deal with Allison Mack in this was. They're like, let's get some of that Smallville fans in here for this. Maybe that was the logic. And I, of course, now I remember it was a big deal back in 2008 or whatever when this movie came out. But, you know, 10 years later, I completely forgot about it. And she was fine as Power Girl. There are some more amusing references to Power Girl in the comic book that kind of leave out of this. I mean, the fact that if anyone has seen Power Girl, she has very large breasts and a boob window, as the comic book fans. I mean, that's what it's called. I believe, like, it's, I don't know if that's a technical term, but in fandom, it's called the boob window. We all know what it is in her costume. And anyway, they make some more overt references to that in the comic book. Like the hero, the little toy man Junior, like, you know, checking her out and stuff. Not so much in the movie.
No, it's definitely, yeah, like I said, they definitely brought the comic book to the animated movie just with the animation side of things. But another actor, just to finish off that, was looking at it the other day, I didn't realize Corey Burton, so the voice of Brainiac, was actually the voice of Shazam, Captain Marvel. I didn't realize that was Corey, because obviously you hear him with that different tone as Brainiac and you don't realize that. All right, that's Corey Burton. All right, fine.
Yeah, I mean, he does a lot of voices in animation. Like, he's an animation guy, so you'll see his name across a bunch of DC stuff as well. So yeah, no, just to see him as different roles, and that's something cool. Like, and that's something from the comics. Like, I they changed some things to kind of streamline the story, obviously.
Yep.
But they did keep certain beats. Like when I like it when Batman Superman switch with, you know, they call it castling, like you do in chess, you know, where you switch the rook with the king. You know, that's why Superman dresses up as Captain Marvel, as he's called.
Yep. Yep.
You know, not Shazam. They still call him Captain Marvel back then in the mid-2000s.
That's true.
And then Batman becomes Hawkman. But but you know, something that I think is missing here, and that's what made the comics so strong, is the inner monologue between Batman and Superman. Like, that was such a great, one of the great appeals of this whole series, because, you know, they're best friends professionally, but they have their own point of views on each other personally, and having their thought bubbles, and I don't, that was so interesting about this whole, that was the gimmick of this series, if they had one, right?
Yeah.
And of course, this is an animated movie, they're not going to do that. So I think part of what, I mean, I like this one, you know?
Yeah.
I'd probably give it, you know, a B+, if we're going to do that here. I'm not going to like put it in the show notes or whatever, but if we're just talking for conversation's sake. But I think it's missing what made the comic so special, which was that kind of like inner monologue. Like, I do love the parts where Batman and Superman are just talking. Like, hey, what happened to Magpie? She died. Man. why don't any of the good villains die? What's a good villain? You know, that kind of small talk, it's great. And that's why you love this series. But, you know, it wasn't very present very much here. So, I mean, you had the whole same beats like Lex Luthor's president, and that was in Justice League Unlimited, you know. And Amanda Waller, CCH Pounder, is back.
Yep.
So
I was just about to mention that as well, just seeing her come back and, you know, being the liaison to the president. And she always speaks her mind, doesn't matter what TV show she's in. She, you know, Amanda Waller always speaks her mind. We won't talk about Suicide Squad, but that's another story. but yeah, it was just, again, I think what made this move was just bringing those voice actors back as well. And I think that's what made it in the long run. The storyline I thought was good, you know, especially some of the scenes, you know, when Superman's fighting Metallo. And yeah, it just made the actual movie itself, I think, mainly the voice actors and the animation as well.
And then it did, and you realize that how the comic book, it might translate better in a comic because it's, this movie's like one battle after another.
Yeah.
You know, it's like big group battle. It kind of got tiresome after a while. I'm like, all right, we get it. Like, here are the villains, and here's Captain Atom, and then I forget his name, but Major Force, was that his name?
That,
like
the bad
Captain Atom, you know? And they get that, and it's like, okay, we get it. Da-da-da-da-da. We do get Lex Luthor in his battle suit, you know, which is cool. We always love to see that. I thought this in the comic books too, and I think it's kind of the point. But the Batman Superman amalgamation spaceship is ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's just ridiculous.
I can't remember the name of the kid. You know, the smart Japanese kid.
Hero's
yeah.
name. Yeah,
I thought.
And he goes by Toy Man. I don't know what his association with Toy Man is, but that's what he goes by.
No, but that's one way to, because Batman obviously, you know, tried to, because he jumped in the ship, I suppose, and tried to, you know, he basically thought, you know, Superman's going towards this kryptonite, and if he goes anywhere near it, he's going to kill himself. So that's probably a good storyline, the fact that Batman, you know, he was going to try, he knew pretty much he was going to kill himself to try and save humanity, but we all know he survived. But, you know, a good little section part of that storyline in the end.
And, you know, and seeing Lex Luthor as president, I like how he tries to spin the whole, like, kryptonite is coming here, and it has radiation that affects Superman's mind, and you can see why people would believe this guy over Superman, because it's all about framing the story, right?
Yeah.
And that goes to in the real world as well, right? It's all about framing the story. So, but I think we'll hit on this every time, with every movie. These could all have been live action movies.
Yep.
You know, I feel like that's like, I could definitely see, especially Superman Doomsday, right? I could see that being like, if they made a Death of Superman movie in like 1999 or whatever, right? If they made Superman Lives, but less crazy, it would be that movie. Like, they would distill it down into this. Same here. Like, they would distill the President Lex storyline down into this. And it's something I still want to see in live action. I'm still waiting for it.
Yep.
Right? Smallville is, and apparently will forever be as close as we get, because we're back to goofy, crazy Lex Luthors on the big screen. Aren't they funny? Lex Luthor's such a funny, goofy guy. No. Okay, so I definitely enjoyed that storyline here, because, I mean, like, politics, right?
Yep.
Is the ultimate, you know, power game in this country, in the world.
Yep.
And that's something that how does Superman fight against that when he's supposed to be like America's hero? How does he fight against, like, you know, a corrupt American government, right? So that's a fascinating story that needs to be told in live action at some point. So anyway,
I think just to finish off on this one, bringing back to Lois and Clark, New Adventures of Superman, there's a storyline in there when it's too hot and they're blaming Superman, and Lex Luthor's turning up his nuclear power plant and making the, you know, Metropolis way too hot. So eventually, you know, they go, oh, Superman must leave to, you know, obviously very different storylines, but similar in some instances. And again, Lex Luthor's behind it. So it just goes to show, like, he's the voice of, you know, trying to tell everybody that I am your savior.
I agree. And the next film is a sequel to this.
Mm.
You know, in the comics, right? Because we have the Superman, Batman, and I knew they were going to do this with the New 52, right? Because when they had Superman, Batman, pre-New 52, post-crisis, this series, it was called Superman, Batman.
Yep.
Right? But we live in an era where it's post-Dark Knight trilogy, the greatest character of all time. So it's like, oh no, we're going to call this Batman, Superman now. I'm like, all right, I see how it is, DC. You know, but I just, as a Superman fan my whole life, first and foremost, that just annoyed me. It's like, this is Superman, Batman. Superman was first, literally, it's a year before. He is seniority. But of course, because Batman's cooler and everybody likes Batman now, you know. I mean, I know it's kind of a tangent, but it did annoy me because I expected it. Like, they're like, there's going to be a new Batman, Superman comic. I'm like, I bet they call it Batman, Superman, not Superman, Batman. Does top billing matter? No, but clearly it does to me. I mean, it wouldn't matter to Superman, so why should it bother me? But it just goes, and I love both characters. I do.
Yep.
But I find it's like, it's so trendy to be like, Superman's boring, but Batman's cool. He's edgy. So you could be Batman if you try. No. Batman is just as unrealistic as Superman, okay? Because no human being could do any of this crap. Like this movie, for example, right? Metallo kicking the crap out of Batman. Like, he would be dead. He'd be dead, okay? Anyway, that's my rant for this. But anyway, another very successful animated film, right? Public Enemy. So they say, let's continue on with this series. So they do the next arc in the comics was Supergirl. That's what it was called. That was introducing Supergirl into the, you know, post-crisis universe, the proper Supergirl.
Yep.
Because at this point in the comics, before pre-crisis, there was no Kara Zor-El from Krypton. You had, like, shape-shifting aliens and just all kinds of weird stuff. People, like, you know, go back to Doomsday, right? If you look at the original Life and Death of Superman, Lex Luthor is a clone, and he's posing as his own son. He has hair and a beard, and Supergirl is the shape-shifting alien.
Yep.
You know, these are things that they're way too complicated, so I understand why they left him out. So all that to say, in Superman, Batman, Supergirl, the second arc of this Jeff Loeb series, they introduced Supergirl. So there is some continuity here between these two movies. So the movie they decided was Superman, Batman, Apocalypse.
Yep.
And they pick up on the thread that there's a giant kryptonite meteorite coming to Earth, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, like you said, that this movie kicks off straight after the end of Public Enemies. Even here, I think it's the radio commentary at the start of the movie, it even talks about basically the end part.
President Luthor's impeachment.
Yeah, exactly. And then we see this the spaceship land in, I think it's Gotham Bay, Gotham Harbor. Mm-hmm. And obviously Batman's onto it straight away. And then we obviously find, you know, eventually this naked girl walking around the streets of Gotham.
Very Terminator.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Even to the point where she's like, she steals a car, she beats up these guys, she's walking around naked. Like, it was very Terminator, I thought.
Yep, exactly. Terminator 3. I can't remember the actress in Terminator 3, but all I know is she's out of season 4, I think, of Lois and Clark. She's actually in that, believe it or not, when she thinks she's figured out Superman's secret and thinks Jimmy Olsen is Superman. I remember that episode quite clearly.
Okay, Christina Loken is her name. Okay. You're telling me she is in an episode of Lois and Clark?
I was shocked too, trust me. I'll track it down for you, and I'll find out what the episode
That is amazing. I did not know this. That is amazing. Well, Supergirl, right? She's voiced by Summer Glau here.
Exactly.
Right?
But Terminator.
Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles. Yeah. Hashtag it's all connected. Exactly. But anyway, please, go on.
And Batman being the great detective that he is, he figures out, she must be Kryptonian. So he just happens to have this big kryptonite chunk of rock. I don't know if that's on him.
Well, he just found it under the water. I thought that was clever.
Oh, that's true.
Right?
Yep.
So there is a reason he had a giant piece of kryptonite. Because she shows up. She can't control her powers.
Yep.
And like, what do we do with her? And so Batman finally stops her.
Yep.
And I did like the fact she was speaking Kryptonian.
Yep.
And just, it was gibberish to everybody. Because yep. That's what you would do if you were an alien. And Superman, you know, eventually comes in and speaks Kryptonian to her. And you almost never hear anyone speak Kryptonian. So that's interesting to hear that.
Yeah, exactly. I was just, that's in my notes, actually. It's the fact that it's probably the first time we hear Kryptonian. Like in every other incarnation of Krypton that you hear about, even the Krypton TV series, you don't really hear Kryptonian speak. So it was good to hear, but also it was good to see Krypto, you know.
I love Krypto. Love Krypto.
He hates Supergirl in this movie, but he come running in and, that was pretty funny. But
no, yeah, I like it. Batman doesn't trust her because
no.
That's Batman,
yep.
Right? Superman trusts her too much because that's
Superman.
And then we introduce the third member of the DC Trinity, Wonder Woman, yep. Right? Because there's a whole, because they call it Apocalypse, right?
Yep.
This whole plot, because Darkseid wants to add a new female Fury,
yep.
Right? If you're into the fourth world characters, right? You know what these are. But you think the Furies are going to come kidnap Supergirl, but somebody shows up in the middle of the night to kidnap Supergirl, but it's not them. It's Wonder Woman and the Amazons.
Yep.
So I felt that that was an interesting, and this is all obviously based off the comic. But I thought that was a real cool kind of wrinkle to get them in on this because, hey, who better to train the super powerful woman than all these super powerful women?
Yeah, well, I totally agree. I thought that was a good introduction. And I was thinking the same thing. I think when I first watched this, I thought that was definitely going to be maybe Granny Goodness or the Furies coming back. But just prior to that part of the movie, I thought this is pretty funny. It's something like, with Supergirl, Kara and Clark are walking around. He's buying clothes and stuff for her. And she dresses up in some outfit and he goes, "No," and she goes, "I'll take it." And it's just something, this little funny scenes in that I thought was pretty cool.
I agree. That she was learning to be an Earth girl, and it is because he's like her surrogate dad, you know. So it is very amusing. They have some good comedy about that. And I wanted more of that.
Yep.
Like this movie, like I really liked the beginning, and I actually really liked the end. But the middle of it was just like, it kind of sagged for me. Like it just felt like, where are we going with this?
Yep.
You know, like she's training with Wonder Woman. She makes a friend who sees the future, and it's not her, it's her friend, Harbinger, who dies, and they send an army of Doomsday clones.
Yeah.
And that's from the comics, right? Yep. So it's just like, they're basing off the source material, but it's like, I never liked that, to be honest, anyway, in the comics. And then, you know, we get to Darkseid, right? Darkseid, all the other characters, Supergirl is not, Summer Glau is a new voice for Supergirl. But Granny Goodness is still Ed Asner.
Yep.
Wonder Woman is still Susan Eisenberg.
Yep.
So a lot of the same voice cast, right? But they don't get Michael Ironside, they get Andre Brower.
Yeah,
and I like Andre Brower, but like, and you know, he's always like a authoritative like person of the law. He's like a cop or a lawyer. You've seen him on all these shows. He's on Brooklyn Nine-Nine right now. People know him best from that.
Yep.
But he's on Homicide: Life on the Street, Law and Order. Like that's the kind of guy he is. He's a cool guy. He's got a cool voice and all, but he's not Michael Ironside, so it's just not as good to me.
No, I totally agree. The fact that they got all these great voice actors back from the original cast. It's just not the same. Even though you can still live with it and go through the rest of the movie. Just that Michael Ironside to me,
Darkseid.
That is Darkseid.
His name is Darkseid.
Jeez, all these people. But even nowadays, you hear other reincarnations of people trying to voice this character, and you just think, Michael Ironside is that. That is Darkseid. He did a good job. I think, for the movie itself. I don't know if Michael Ironside was he on Smallville at the time when they
yeah. Was he filming his season 10 episode during the making? Was he making Terminator Salvation? Maybe that's what he was doing.
True. Because
he was in that to keep bringing it back to Terminator. And he was fine, I just felt like all the, we're fighting on Apocalypse now. It's stuff we'd all seen in Superman the Animated Series, much more effective when Superman goes to Apocalypse and fights Darkseid. And I think we even talked about that in our last episode, in our last 33.1. We talked about how what a great episode that was. And this was like just a not as good version of that. But then, the end, huge bait and switch, because you're like, let's go meet the Kents. Like, Kara's like, I want to live here. I know what I want to do. Clark Dix are home. And then, like, they go to meet the Kents, and Darkseid is there. And they have a whole fight. I'm like, whoa! And I felt so bad for the Kent farm because it's getting destroyed, as it always does in these things.
Yep.
And then I'm like, where are Jonathan and Martha? And they show up at the end. And they're like, hey, Mom and Dad, this is Kara. And then the barn just falls apart. And lots of good comedy in this, to your point from earlier. So
it definitely was an interesting take when I first watched it, because I have not read the comic book at the time. I was not expecting that. I thought, the story's over. Pretty soft ending. But then obviously we saw the fight scene at the end, the fact that two of them, you think Superman's obviously gone. He's been, Darkseid's got him, and then Supergirl comes at him. And so, they eventually just kick him back into outer space.
She reprograms the boom tube.
That's
so
it.
Floating out into the cosmos. So, something else I really did like about this this one was, this again, from the comic, right? But it's how Darkseid respects Batman and knows that he's not bluffing. Because he's like, had it been the Kryptonian or the Amazon, I would have called their bluff. But humans, they kill each other to achieve victory, and that I can respect. So it's like the human... And that's the whole, like, Batman, I was just talking best about Batman right before we talk about this movie, but there are elements to this which are good. Batman the human is the one who can outwit Darkseid, God, new God, right, quote unquote. So I like that element of the story as well. And he plays a big role in it, and to wrap it up, the comedy, right, because back when Supergirl had just shown up and couldn't control her power, Batman has her in the Batcave, and she destroys the Batcomputer with her heat vision. And Batman's like, that's a $50,000 specialized computer. And Superman says, give me the bill. And Batman says, on a reporter's salary. And then that comes back around at the end. It's like, I'm still waiting. You owe me a computer. And Superman's like, reporter's salary. And it's kind of a joke. So, but that's what I like about these guys. I like how they have this chemistry together.
Yeah.
And, but we didn't get any more of these movies.
That's what I was about to ask you, Zach. Would you have liked them to have done more?
Well, the storylines get more complicated at this point. Like the next one is like about like alternate timelines and stuff, and it's way too convoluted. So I understand why they didn't keep doing this. But Of course, I would like if they just did a whole series of these, I would watch them. But I mean, to be honest, I'd probably give this one like a C, you know, because it's the weakest of the ones we've seen so far, I think.
Yeah, I'll probably agree. Probably be a C or a C plus. I think you said it had a good action at the start, good at the end, but in the middle there was a lot going on. I think overall C plus, maybe even a B minus, maybe. But yeah, I think we're basically on the same scale there.
And it wasn't. It's weird because it's a sequel.
Yeah.
Right, to Public Enemies, but it looks totally different. It's a totally different art style.
Yep.
Which is, again, from the comics. And I'm like, all right, I get in the comics they did that, but if you're trying to make these movies be sequels,
yeah.
Like, of the two, I do prefer Ed McGuinness. I prefer his art. I forgot the guy who did this, what artwork they were basing it off of, but I liked the Ed McGuinness art more. This one just felt like Batman was more like, I don't know, like stylized, I guess, or... anyway.
No, I think you're right. If they're going to keep that and say it is a sequel, keep the same animation style for both because it kind of makes sense.
So, All-Star Superman, Nathan, have you read that comic book?
Yeah, I do. Okay. Like you, I've got it behind me.
Okay.
I think just to start off with this movie, I think they try to take the best parts out of the book and try to put it into the movie. I think there's a lot of good stuff that wasn't put into the movie, and it could have made a lot more sense. But the movie overall, I liked it, but it was definitely a completely different Superman than I'm used to.
Yeah, this is Grant Morrison, and he has some weird ideas and weird thoughts and things, and that is very evident from the very beginning of this film. But here's what I've said on this podcast before, and probably in social media somewhere, like, All-Star Superman is fine, okay? But I think I kind of swing the other way on the pendulum because people act like this is the greatest Superman story ever told. I'm like, actually, it's not. So I kind of go like, what are you talking about? It's ridiculous. You know, it is, you know, there's some great stuff in here. Mm. But I mean, I don't understand why people are acting like it's like the Batman Year One or the Dark Knight Returns of Superman. I'm like, no, it's really not, guys. Like there are some kernels of greatness. Like, and I think to your point, the movie really felt like vignettes than like a continuous story. It's like, here's the Lois Lane Superman issue.
Yep.
Here is the fellow Kryptonians come to take over Earth issue. Here's the Clark Kent and Lex Luthor in prison issue. And here's the Lex Luthor gets superpowers and there's a sentient sun issue, which is crazy. And it didn't, there was like no connective tissue up till the very end when Lex Luthor gets the serum that Superman made for Lois Lane and they bring in the Sun Eater to eat the sun and all that stuff. But you get what I'm hitting on here. I think we're in agreement that it felt kind of schizophrenic.
Just seemed very unorganized. Like I said, there were good parts of it. I like the, speaking of, what is going on at the Fortress of Solitude? What is in there? Is the Titanic in there? Is what everything?
Space shuttle.
It's like, what the hell has he got in there? But anyway,
there's a middle ground to be found with like the Richard Donner Fortress of Solitude, where it's like just an ice, not a, a crystal palace, right? An ice crystal palace, if you will, with like nothing. And then like something like this, where it's like everything. I feel like the animated series was a little more like the perfect balance, where it's like, okay, I have a zoo back here, but it's because I found a spaceship with a zoo on it. That's why I have these things. Like, it's like, why do you have like airplanes? What, I don't know what else he has in here. They go to him and Lois have dinner, and like you said, the Titanic. So weird. And she, it's weird on this one. Like, she thinks that Superman was pretending to be Clark Kent for like today or something. And it's like, no. I am Clark Kent. And like up to the very end, she thinks she's pulling one over on him, which is interesting because she doesn't want to think that he's been lying to her the whole time. So I liked this a lot better this time around than I did when I saw it the first time. It's interesting, a little side note. When this first came out, Lance and I were playing catch. And outside, because it was a nice day outside, he throws a ball at me, and it glances off the top of my glove and hits me in the eye, like right under the eye. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be blind. I'm going to have an eye patch the rest of my life. I slowly move my hand, and I'm okay. I was wearing some sunglasses, and the sunglasses shattered and kind of protected my face. I did have a giant black eye for like 2 months after this. I look pretty badass, if I must say so myself. But the point is, we did that, and then we came inside and watched this movie. And I was like, and I believe I said, I think my exact words were like, man, I feel like I just got hit in the face with another baseball after watching this. Because I thought it was ridiculous. Because I saw this before I'd read the comic book. And the note that they decide to end on is, it's like, Superman dead? He's not dead. He's up there fixing the sun. Yeah. Which is the most ridiculous line I've ever heard in anything. And then they repeat it. They repeat it at the end, like, to drive it home. I'm like, this is, what is this sun with an eyeball? And it's ridiculous. What are you smoking, Grant Morrison? So, but okay. So that's a little extreme, right? I get it. So and having a level head now and looking at the source material and coming back to it, you know, I enjoy this much more than I had in the past. I would actually think this is probably the best one of this batch so far. I'd give this like an A minus or something, because I like what he was going for, right? With like the whole Clark Kent, Lex Luthor stuff, the ideologies. He's like, you and Superman could have been friends, and the lessons that the other Kryptonians learn. But it just feels like this mixtape of like stuff you know from Superman, where it's like, here's the parasite, and you know, and oh, insert random Kryptonians to come take over the Earth while you're gone, returning Kandor somewhere. You know, it's all kind of contrived because they shoved it all in here and didn't have the space and breathing room of the comic book.
I think you're right, and I was the same as you. I watched this movie before I read the comic book, and after reading the comic book, I actually got a lot more, probably, I wouldn't say love, but a lot more enjoyment out of the movie, I suppose, because they brought that story. There's one facet of that the movie, when they're having dinner on the Titanic, as you do, inside an iceberg, you know, Lois is typing away and she's sweating in ice, but anyway, and then she thinks that Superman's actually trying to kill her,
she gets paranoid, yeah, with the robots and all that, yeah.
And then she goes off and shoots this robot, and then she finds out, obviously, later on that Superman's making this serum for her to make her super for a day, to have all Superman's powers, obviously, minus the kryptonite, and Superwoman suit,
Superwoman, yeah.
So, that was a good, you know, a good facet, and then obviously when they go into Metropolis and they try to fight crime together and they find, yeah, the underground, and Atlas, I think his name is, and so all that.
Bizarre.
Yeah.
Solomon, time traveling, I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's so weird. But it's Grant Morrison. If you understand, yeah. Grant Morrison, I don't know, Grant Morrison, because he's been on like podcasts, he's been on like the Kevin Smith's Fat Man on Batman, stuff like that. I would love to just sit and listen to him give lectures about comic book superheroes, right? I think he has such a unique, fascinating, deep understanding of these. He's like, it's modern mythology, you know. But he's not even in my top five favorite comic writers. It's just so weird. You got to be in the right mindset,
yeah,
to read and appreciate Grant Morrison. So it's not for everybody. So I can see. So I go back and forth. Like I go to extremes for comedic effect a lot when I'm talking about this. So I don't think it's just garbage or anything, right? But it's like, it was. Seeing this out of context was shocking back in the day, and having revisited it now,
yeah,
I really did appreciate what they were going for. And, you know, I think it was the best of this lot so far, especially because Superman playing the long game, showing Lex Luthor how he sees the world, that shows him the error of his ways.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's the ultimate win for Superman there. So I thought that was very clever. So
yeah. And then another part of the, so the Sun Eater, as you're talking about, they actually brought the Sun Eater. You only see it for a little bit. They actually brought that into the latest season of Supergirl. Very, very small part of an episode there. Manchester Black, I don't know if you've seen any versions of this from Supergirl, the latest season. He tries to escape when he's in the Fortress of Solitude. He goes into that tunnel, but the hat ends up saving him. But as soon as what's inside that door, went straight back to All-Star Superman, so I knew exactly who they were talking about. So that's a good thing, I suppose, but yeah.
The music here was actually really good.
Yep.
I felt this was the most John Williams-esque of any of the music that we've heard so far. So I wish they just use either the same theme, but the animated themes, or the Batman, like da 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 da. That's Superman, obviously, in the Batman. You know, you guys all know the themes, okay? My point, like the musical continuity goes a long way.
Yep.
And because it's all these different stuff, I'm like, is that the Superman theme this time? Oh, okay.
Yep.
Like, I wish they just use. I don't care. They've used it in other versions. I mean, they're using voice actors, you know, and And this cast was fine. Nobody really stuck out to me, honestly. That's another kind of, if I had one more complaint about this particular movie, nobody like stuck out to me. The guy from Desperate Housewives was Superman.
Superman.
Christina Hendricks
yep.
was Lois Lane. So, I mean, fine.
I think Anthony LaPaglia was Lex Luthor.
Yes. Oh, one last thing about this one, though. Our introduction to Jimmy Olsen.
Oh, yeah.
He's wearing a dress. And Steve Lombard, who is a huge jerk, by the way, setting Clark on fire and all this stuff. What are you doing, man? But he's like, he looks at Jimmy. He's like, are you like dressed up for a story? And Jimmy says, no, why? That's pretty good. Pretty good, been funny. So they amp up the violence and the language in these, but they also crank up the comedy.
Yep.
Like, and it's like, it's truly funny, not just like haha cartoon funny. Because it's quote unquote more sophisticated, all these stories. So I don't know. I really do a consistent thing throughout all these, regardless of what they're based on, who's adapting it, is the comedy. Yep. So.
No, totally agree. And going back to what you're talking about with the soundtrack or the score of this, when we move into the next one, Superman versus the Elite, they did actually use the same score for Doomsday.
Yeah, and to me, that kind of like justifies each other. I'm like, oh, good, musical continuity. Because really, like I said, I had to go look it up. I was like, that sounds familiar. Which one of these movies did I hear that in? So this is excellent. Mm. This is, to me, this is like, relatively speaking, it's an A+. Because that's a great, what's so funny about Truth, Justice, the American Way? Yep. It's an issue of Action Comics, 775, if I'm correct. If not, you know,
yeah, I think so.
Come at me, bro.
No, I think you're definitely right. I think I looked it up before, actually, when I was going through my notes. So, yeah, I think you are right.
I know there's a 7 and a 5 in it. Might be 715, might be 775, might be 757. But this is a great deconstruction of Superman and why he's Superman and what sets him apart from other would-be heroes, right? And this is a fairly faithful adaptation. I think it helps because that was basically one issue. So you don't have to, like, look with All-Star Superman, right? It's like 6 issues. So, like, okay, how do we condense this? But this was like, let's just adapt it as is. And Manchester Black and his whole story and all that. I think this is very well done as far, obviously, the original story and then the adaptation. And George Newbern is back as Superman.
Yep. I like the fact that they brought George Newbern back. Bit of a shame they couldn't bring Dana Delaney back to voice Lois Lane, but they brought Paulie Perrette from NCIS, so that was something different.
Yes.
But the good thing was they brought David Kaufman back as Jimmy Olsen, so that was a little bit of a reprieve, I suppose. They brought back the original Jimmy Olsen. But this is my first introduction to the Elite. I hadn't read the comic book previously to this movie. The animation style for this movie was very different. Superman was definitely a different... I wouldn't say Pixar, but I like the little movie they did in the actual the Elite. There was a TV show, I think, and it actually was almost like a Pixar version.
It was very meta. It was like Superman watching a cartoon of himself, which it was played for laughs, but then it was actually informative. Like this is how the world looks at you. You're a joke, you know. And then he's like, 10% goes to charity or something like that, right? So they're like, all proceeds go to charity. That's right. Yeah. Again with the comedy, because him and Lois are watching this. He's like, did I mention that it all goes to charity? And then, like, when Manchester Black teleports him somewhere, he shows up in front of, like, a used car lot, and it's a giant blow-up Superman. It's a super sale. And the salesman's like, if this is a problem, we can give you a 10% cut. this is genuinely funny stuff. But anyway, not to bury the lead there, but that just reminded me of all that. So,
but the actual fact that the Elite themselves, like a lot of how they introduced them, they actually told us the story of Manchester Black. It's actually a pretty sad story, the fact of how he became who he did, and the like. They told it a little bit differently on Supergirl when Manchester Black was on that. Very dark way how he died in that too, but I can tell you that offline. Haven't seen it already. But as you point out before, I think the main outcome of this is basically, this is who Superman is, and that's detailed in the final fight scene. And I thought the way that they brought that on was actually incredible. Just the way that they did it, and just the look in Manchester Black's eyes when Superman started to go rogue, and you can just see Superman's eye, you know, starting to bulge, and the red eye, and, you know.
Bloodshot eye.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, that's something of Superman I'd never seen before, unless it was like evil Superman or anything like that. But definitely, when you saw the end, the outcome after the battle, it just told a good part of who Superman is and why he is who he is.
Yeah, and I like that the slow burn of the Elite, like Superman's like, oh, Well, these are, hey guys, nice to meet you. You know, you watch the collateral damage next time. And they're all like, is this guy for real? You know, but he doesn't, because on the surface, they're not going too extreme. But then the more that he spends time with them, the more he realizes, no, these guys are, they're crossing a line. We're not supposed to cross this line. But the world wants to see heroes cross, or at least they think they do. Right. And that's the struggle Superman has here is like, how can I get across to these people that I know they think they want this, but they don't. And then that was so Superman at the end, right, when he comes back, well, because they take him to the moon, and I thought that was like a Superman 4 reference. They're fighting on the moon, but they take him to the moon. They think they kill him, and then like he just becomes this force of nature, right? And I think probably my favorite moment of this film is when like Superman, he's this giant vortex of like energy, whatever, and like he's creating, and they cut to like the United Nations, and somebody's like, "Is that Superman?" And a guy says, "Not anymore." Like, it's dark, but it's hilarious because you're like, wait. And Superman just unleashing, he's like, I finally understand. I bought what you're selling. Yeah. Is this what you want? You know, they won't kill anyone else ever again. And like to make the guy, Manchester Black, have a taste of his own medicine, you know, and just it shows you Superman, how much he holds back just because he doesn't want to become these people. Like, he could own all these people like without a problem. Mm. And he takes away Manchester's black powers with his heat vision and just like becomes an inch, and within an inch of his life, he beats up Manchester Black. And then, of course, Manchester's been, and all those people have been, you know, broadcasting everything they do. So the genius of Superman is, I'm going to turn this against you. I'm going to have them see, you know, for themselves. And then the public has to decide for themselves, wait, Superman, you don't have to be this way. Like, they stopped Superman from killing Manchester Black, right? At least they think they do.
Yeah.
Superman, he had it all planned out from the jump. But again, Superman using his mind as well as his muscle. And those are the great, that's a great balance for him, because too often they forget that part of the character.
I think you did right. And it's also that story that, you know, if Kal-El didn't land where he did in Smallville, and he got brought up by different parents and the like, I've never actually seen the movie Brightburn. Yeah, you know, that's supposed to be like, you know, the evil version of Superman and stuff like that. You could almost say that's what happened in this movie. But obviously, like you said, he was thinking about what he was doing and try to, you know, explain to the viewing public, you know, this is what you want, but you don't always want what you're going to get in the long run. So, and like you said, it told a good story, I felt.
Well, and it's a good conversation, because even you yourself, you're like, I don't know, maybe you should just kill Atomic Skull, because this guy's a problem, right? Yeah. I mean, but you can't do that, because it is the truest form of a slippery slope, right? You start killing villains, then who deserves to die and who doesn't? Yep. Like, well, he killed a whole city. Well, he killed one guy. Well, and then you're judge, jury, and executioner, and you can't be doing that, you know. And this is just, and I would just, I wish I could. I need to buy like 100 copies of this comic book and hand it out to people who, like, Superman's boring. Yeah. Superman's stupid. Superman, you know, it's like, no. This explains to you everything you need to know. And it's such a brilliant story. And they translated it perfectly.
Yep, I totally agree. And if you want to pass out more of those copies, I'll do it over here in Australia. And we'll ask.
Well, did the whole world get covered? And, you know, it's, and the, you know, the robots play a big part in this.
Yep.
You know, the Fortress Assaulted robots.
Helping them in that.
All of these movies have those. Like, I was like, I've never, like, it's funny, in live action, you never see Fortress of Solitude robots, except for the Supergirl. Like, Helix is there, you know, when they go to the Fortress. But other than that, it's like, what Superman, like, where are these robots coming from? Because it's in Superman Doomsday. It's in, obviously, All-Star Superman, the whole fleet of robots, and they're back in this one as well. So just having his robot workforce is interesting, and that they all play pretty major roles in all these animated films, that they all latched onto that is interesting to me.
Well, they started off with Man of Steel, you know, with Kalex, you know, on Krypton itself, but they, you know, even though the spaceship brought over one as well, but when, you know, that to me, that was not the Fortress of Solid. That was just the spaceship. It just happened to come out of that. So,
well, at the time, we're like, oh, that's the Fortress. No, it's it's not. But I guess, the last thing I'll say about this is, even, like, it's very self-aware, too, because even Superman is, like, talking to Lois, and she's like, well, I don't know, the world really does want people to get what they deserve, and Superman's like, well, you don't think that way, do you? And she's like, So even at home, you know, it's like, it's a tricky subject, yeah. But ultimately, they raise this question, which is always a great question to raise about, why doesn't Batman just kill the Joker, or something, right? Yeah. And then they address it. And they answer it in a satisfying way. And I think that is why, if they didn't like bring it home like that, it would be, well, that was interesting they brought that up. I still don't know what the answer is, but no, they answer it for you.
Yeah.
Like, this is why Superman is who he is and what separates him from all these other vigilantes.
Yeah, totally agree. So this leads to our last movie we're going to talk about that they've made probably before the New 52, being Superman Unbound.
Why do they retitle these movies, Nathan?
I was looking at, because funnily enough, I was going through my comic book collection before, and sometimes I forget what I've got, and I found it. I'm thinking, why is that called Superman Unbound? Why don't they just call it, you know, Brainiac?
Because people know what Brainiac is. Yeah. Like, even though he's yet to ever appear in a Superman film. Yeah. Right. Everybody knows a Brainiac is a, and it's become a term. Like, oh, you're a Brainiac, right? Yeah. It's in the vernacular of the world. So this is Jeff Johns, who is my favorite comic writer, and then Gary Frank. I love the way Gary Frank draws Superman because he bases him off Christopher Reeve, right? But for this film, they decided not to copy the artistic style. I don't know if that's like a rights issue for likenesses. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I was like, that's disappointing because like I love Jeff Johns. I love Jeff Johns. I love him too. But I love how Jeff. I did say Jeff Johns. I thought I said Jeff Loeb.
Yeah.
It's late. I'm in America and you're in Australia. We're in different time zones. But my point is, in addition to the storytelling, I love the team work, the team up, the writer arter team of Jeff Johns and Gary Frank.
Yeah.
And that is in the original graphic novel called, or you know, it's a graphic novel collection now, but the issues of Action Comics of the Brainiac story. But it's not here. I'm like, okay, and it's very, to me, this animation is generic. I'm like, okay, it's fine, I guess. But I have no strong opinions other than I wish they would have done it like the comic book looked. So
yeah, I totally agree. And the one thing I found interesting with this movie was I like the TV show Castle. You know, Nathan Fillion, Stana Kartik, and Molly C. Quinn. I just thought it was funny that Nathan Fillion was off voice acting Green Lantern. And, oh, okay, well, can the other two actors do? All right, let's do Lois Lane and Supergirl. So that's what we basically brought into this movie. So the cast of Castle has come to this movie. And the one actor that they've tried to make the live-action Superman, as in Matt Bomer, or Boomer, however you pronounce his name.
I say it both ways just to be safe, but yeah.
So we can't get him on the live-action, so let's get him as voice acting of Superman to see how that goes. And if that comes across well, then we'll see how it goes on next.
Yeah, he was on the short list with Henry Cavill and Brandon Routh back in the mid-2000s.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's great that, like, they found a way for him to be Superman after all. Now, have you seen the Japanese car commercial with him as Superman?
Oh, I've heard about it. I haven't seen it, though.
It's on YouTube.
Yep.
Go look it up. It came out around the time Superman Returns, but he's Clark Kent for a bit, and then he's Superman for a bit. So you see what he would have been as. He's in the Superman Returns costume, or at least a copy of it.
Yep.
And it's like, it's a nice little what if window into this alternate universe where Matt Boomer was cast as Superman. So, but yeah, I like that they cast him.
Yeah.
And I wish they would do that more often with this stuff. Like, oh, well, you were on a, like Nicolas Cage. Well, let's get him to voice Superman in a, you know, and they did in Teen Titans Go. That's kind of a parody of a movie. I'm talking like, you know, do Superman, you know, when they make the Death and Life of Superman again, which is inevitable,
just
get Nick Cage to do the voice.
Yeah. Well, actually, talking about what you said with Matt Bomer being in the ad, he probably spent more time in the Superman suit than Tom Welling has, so that's a start. but there was actually a rendition on Facebook yesterday, actually, because I saw a little thing on Matt Bomer as Superman. I'm thinking, oh, come on, the whole Cavill thing and, you know, they're replacing him, and then all of a sudden there's a picture of Matt Bomer as Superman. I'm thinking, oh, so now all of a sudden the Crisis of Infinite Earths is going in one stream. Well, let's start bringing up, you know, the DCEU. Anyway, that's another story altogether. But yeah, this story was it's almost a different rendition of obviously the Superman Batman Apocalypse with Supergirl. It's almost like this is the first time we've seen her in animated. It's almost like they retold the story of her coming to Earth, and I like the little scene at the start. They've obviously done the battle. Like Superman's off doing something, and Lois, as always, gets captured. And then Supergirl, you know, saves the day. A little bit too extreme in some instances, but there's a part where, you know, Superman grabs the front of the helicopter, gets Lois to, you know, very similar to Batman v Superman, I suppose, when, you know, she lets go and Superman flies straight across and, you know, knocks out the bad guy and, you know, he tips the helicopter to one side. But there's a little part after that. She goes, you remember your place? I'm older than you. And Superman goes, not here, you're not, sort of thing. So it was a good start to the movie, I thought.
Always helicopters with Superman, right? It's always the way, right? But hey, you know, we mentioned Corey Burton earlier. I think he is the iconic voice of Brainiac. I just think it's amazing. But I like John Noble as an actor. I love Fringe. I don't know if anybody's seen Fringe, but I highly recommend Fringe if you're into like science fiction. And it's like the X-Files, but done better in half the time. That's how I explain Fringe to people. Yep. But John Noble is Brainiac. He's fine.
Yep.
You'll also know him as Boromir and Faramir's dad from The Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
The Horn of Gondor and all that good stuff. But he's fine as Brainiac.
Even though it was a Superman story, it was based a lot on Supergirl's past, I suppose. The fact that, you know, they told a bit how she came to Earth and how she was to be.
And how she saw Brainiac on Krypton.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to, like, if they make a live, like, I think this is, and again, you know, all of these are great templates for live action movies,
yep.
right? So if you're introducing concepts like Supergirl and Brainiac to, like, the general audience, people who aren't us, this is a great way to do it.
Yeah, and you can see that, like the TV show Krypton, you can see where they base their Brainiac off.
Yes, yep. Very much so.
And watching it again today, going back, even you know Superman going onto Brainiac's ship and then going off to see you know Kara's parents that they're still alive and you know on the
Kandor, yes.
That's the one.
The bottle city of Kandor.
Yeah,
yes.
That's the one. You always hear about it and stuff like that, but it's good that they actually show this into a movie. You never actually have seen that. In any movie so far, no, we've read about it and stuff like that.
Yeah, the only one is you know he mentions in All Star Superman. He's like, well, I found a new planet for the Kandorians. I'm going to take them away, and that's like, it's like an afterthought.
Yeah.
You know, it's always like or it's there in the background of the fortress. You're like, oh, I know what that is. You know, for then to play a role into it, and especially have the personal tie with Kara of Supergirl. And Supergirl, she has an actual secret identity in this.
Yep.
Which is nice because it's like I've always thought it's odd. It's like okay. Clark Kent has a cousin named Kara.
Yep.
And Superman has a cousin named Kara, like who looks exactly the same. Like you guys need to plan this out better.
Yep.
So even Smallville, which you know, kind of basing it off Supergirl the movie from 1984, has you know Laura Vandervoort in that last scene of the episode called Supergirl in season 10. She's got the you know brown hair and the glasses and all that. I like that there's effort put into Supergirl having a secret identity. Is basically my point. So.
No, exactly, and it brings me back to Supergirl the movie. Yeah, Linda Lee. Yeah, it's even a funny story how she gets that name. She's just looking around the office, and then that's how she comes up with the name. But you know, it is what it is.
Oh man, but yeah, so this is a. Again, Brainiac is a underused resource as far as Superman villains go. I think, and it's great that I don't understand why they retitled it. But a very worthy opponent of Superman, and ultimately he's done in the same way the Martians from the War of the Worlds are done in, right? The bacteria of Earth. So I thought that was a very interesting way to go ahead and defeat him at the end.
Well, I was just about to say the same thing. The ending was very different than what you're used to. Very similar to, I suppose, Man of Steel, you know, when he starts to learn that, when Zod's on Earth for the first time and he loses his shield and he has all those thoughts and feelings go through. But this one's more about all the bacteria and the fact that how Brainiac is actually starts to deteriorate because of being on planet Earth. And it starts to make you think, and say, well, if he's going through that, that's most of us every single day in our lives. So what the hell's going on with us? But
you don't want to look at your skin under a microscope. It would probably freak people out. But no, he's I get it, because he's a clean, sterile, mechanical thing, you know? And so you introduce him to, like, a swamp, right? And it's disgusting. So, anyway.
But I like that, you know, the fight scene... Yeah, like I said, with regards to that, was a little bit different, but I understand exactly why they did it. And, you know, the good part at the end, you know, Clark goes to Lois and are you okay and everything like that, and then he proposes to her at the end. So, and that's what we've said about all these movies. He either, you know, Lois doesn't know his secret, she does know his secret, they married, they're not married. So, you know, they've played around with that a lot, and this is obviously a different tale. And like I said, this is the first movie that Bruce Timm wasn't a part of. So a lot of people thought that this storyline a little bit different because he wasn't involved with it. But I think the movie overall was good.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately they're basing it off of the original stories. So, I mean, yeah, it's great to have Bruce Timm as that, like, quote-unquote, guiding hand and all this. But, you know, this is not what we're talking about tonight. But Bruce Timm was heavily involved in Batman the Killing Joke. And we all see how that turned out. So maybe it's for the best that he was not involved. And I will say, I got to give a shout-out to Dwayne McDuffie, who was a big creative force between the animated series. And he was a lot more involved in the Justice League movies as well. But he was a guiding hand and creative force for a lot of these films, and he unfortunately passed away a few years ago. But his contributions cannot be spoken of highly enough, because he created the Milestone universe with Icon, Rocket, yep. Static Shock, right? But he also was a heavy creative mind behind a lot of these as well. And he's missed, you know, as a person and a creator in the field. But yeah, it's interesting. This was right around the time that, like, Dark Knight Returns came out. And Dark Knight Returns is my favorite of any of these. You know, like, I was just complaining about, oh, Batman's so cool, Superman sucks, and I'm here saying Batman's the best. Blah, 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 blah. Yep. So I'm a hypocrite, you know. But it's but the Bruce Timm wasn't involved in that either. I don't think so. This is when he was kind of stepping away from these.
Yeah, I think so. But leading into The Dark Knight Return is that you know what we talked about before with the Joker, the fact that you know that he did kill the Joker in that movie, but we can talk about that movie or that series of movies for hours as well.
Superman's in that, so we might have to talk about it in our next conversation.
Exactly,
you know? So
and
we'll talk.
I wonder if
Mark Valley from Fringe, who co-starred with John Noble from Superman Unbound as Brainiac. There it is. Hashtag it's all connected. So before we kind of wrap up and all that final thoughts and stuff, I must say, this is probably, you know, I'm a prude, I'm an old-fashioned guy, I'm a square, right? But Lois Lane shooting Brainiac the bird, I thought, was a little much. Like, it's like, we're so edgy. We're PG-13 now. Like, I don't know. What did you think of that?
It's just not a story that you think about with Lois Lane. It's just, you know, and even going...
I could see Amy Adams doing that.
Yep, maybe. But it just seems like we're talking about the animation style as well as just the fact that, you know, they're going back to the TV show. Like, she's always in purple. Like, and I think her eyes are purple as well. Like, I don't know why they decided that's the Lois Lane look, and she has to look like that as well. But, it's definitely a good storyline in some respect. Like I said, there's a lot of action in it. But also there's also a lot of slow parts in it as well. The way that they spoke about the ending, and, yeah, it was definitely... but Brainiac itself, you know, that version of Brainiac, I think, is an awesome version compared to the one that we saw in the animated TV show.
Yeah, I mean, had they done this as a live-action movie, I think it would have been better than Superman Returns or Man of Steel.
Well, we're going to see Brainiac eventually on the big screen. It's just got to happen. You know, they keep coming up.
This is what I've been telling people, Nathan. They don't make Superman movies anymore.
No.
So it's not going to... You're never going to see it. No, I certainly hope they do.
Yeah.
And at this point, look, it's going to be a reboot.
Yeah.
Right? Let's face it, right? So, and I mean, we have enough Superman as it is. Just look at Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yep.
But if they're going to reboot the damn thing, right? Make it about Brainiac. Make him take inspiration from the animated series. He was he contributed to the destruction of Krypton, comes to Earth. Throw in a little Lex Luthor, I guess, right? Have a double cross deal there.
Yep.
But the story writes itself.
Yep.
People have been writing these stories for 80 years now. It's all there.
Yep.
So don't just don't give us, you know, Zod or Lex Luthor again, right? I mean, just like throw Brainiac, right? I mean, he is the number three guy after those two, I would say, right?
Yeah. And even leading to that, there's a lot more supervillains out there that are above the ones that we've seen already, and they need to bring that onto the big screen, and that's what the fans want to see. And if you go onto YouTube or any social media side of things, the amount of fan films out there as well that people have actually created, because we the fans could probably tell and write a better story and a better movie than half of these executives that they could do for Warner Brothers. Like, but you know, that's just the nature of the
That's the thing. Like, these aren't perfect. Like, you know what? I'd probably give this one like a B minus or something.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was, you know, it was okay. Some parts were great, some parts, you know, whatever. But ultimately, these people, all their minds are in the right place. Their hearts are in the right place. They have a right understanding of these characters, right?
Yeah.
And so if you take, it's what Kevin Smith always says. And he's like, man, what'd you call the people over at DC, man? They write you a movie. Like, that's exactly what they should be doing. Like, get your Bruce Timms and, you know, all these guys here and set them loose on a feature film, you know. And they have all the core elements of the characters and the stories here, and just expand that. And then it would be so much more faithful to the original character and make a lot more sense, because a lot of these movies just are there's a lot of nonsense going on that's unnecessary.
Yep.
And I think it's a win-win. Like, as long as it's a good story well told, who cares if, like, nerds... It's almost these days, it's like, oh, do nerds like this? Well, no, we have to change it. It's like, no, it's fine. Like, it's okay. Normal people will like it too. It's a good story. So you get what I'm saying, Nathan?
I do. And to be honest, there's a little nerd in everybody. Like,
yes.
Yeah, with the amount of comic book movies that are on the big screen at the moment, the amount that are coming on next year and the like, you know, Joker's out next week here in Australia. I think it's the same for you. So, you know, there's a lot of good feedback from that movie. I'm still going in there with an open mind. It's obviously not the story that I'm used to and what I've been told in the past, but I've spoken to people that have seen it already and they think it's amazing. So and you love the actor, so you know it's going to be an interesting version. But I'm like I said, I'm going with open mind. Birds of Prey, I'm a bit worried about. Harley Quinn's in, you know, Margot Robbie's in as Harley Quinn, so you know, I think she was the shining light out of Suicide Squad, if there was anything to come out of that. And you know, seeing a picture of James Gunn and his cast for the new Suicide Squad movie. So there are some shining lights out there, but yeah, it's going to take some time.
Well, ultimately, Nathan, you know, as we wrap up here, like I found myself, you know, rewatching, revisiting these movies. Like for the most part, I liked them all more than I had in on the initial watch there. Actually, you know, ironically, it's the Superman Batman ones. Both I kind of liked a little less than I remembered, and all the other ones I liked more. But I will say, like, this kind of stuff just shows you just the strength of the animation and the animated series. Like, if anything, like, I want to go, like, revisit some classic episodes of these animated shows now, you know, because I'm like, man, they, like, these people were doing this on a weekly basis for a while. Right. You know, they get you a lot more respect for them. And so this whole DC animated universe is there's a lot to it and a lot to love in it.
Yeah, and like you said, if they want to make live action movies, there's a lot of storyline in those animated shows in the past, even the Flesher cartoons as well, if we go back that far, but there's a lot of information there that they can grab, they can utilize and bring that to the big screen. So they don't have to go and start making stuff fresh. Everything's there. The encyclopedia is there.
You mentioned the Flesher cartoons. Something that I did want to mention, I really liked most of the opening credits for all these. I think they're very creative. But my favorite was Superman versus the Elite, because it was like this pop art Superman, like with like used clips from all the cartoons, yep. You know, like all of them really in there. And it kind of played into like the whole Superman cartoon in that movie. So that was my favorite opening credit sequence of all these. And I give all these credit for having some. They're all very well done and entertaining. But that was by far the best. Because like, oh, I've seen that cartoon. I know what that is. I thought it was a creative way to use some of their own stuff in a new creative way. So
yeah, I think so. And like you said, bring back the nostalgia sort of things. And again, they use the same soundtrack for Doomsday as well. So in the back of your mind, if you've seen Doomsday, you go, oh, yep, I know exactly what this film's going to be about. So it's good in that respect as well.
All right, Nathan. Well, it's a great topic to talk about this time. So you'll be back again to talk about. We'll look at it. But I think the same movies that Superman is in, but it's not a Superman movie. You know, we're talking Justice League, New Frontier. Justice League, Crisis on Two Earths.
Yep.
Dark Knight Returns, I guess. Yep. You know, we should throw in the Superman Shazam short. Should throw that in there.
Justice League Doom.
There's another. There's so many. So yeah, I think those will be the topics next time. So that'll be fine. You know, a little shorter.
Yep.
Than this time, because we had six movies. So that's, what is that, four movies in a short or three movies in a short?
I think so.
Yeah, so that'll be fun, because this is fun, because it's something, you know, this is not on my radar at all in my, you know, plans on to talk about on the show. So I'm glad this is what you want to talk about, because something we both obviously really have a lot of interest in, a lot of things to say, and it's fun going back and forth about this stuff, which obviously because I really haven't on a podcast, so it's great.
Now, well, like I said, Zach, you know, when I was looking to doing a podcast myself, there's a lot of things I love, like Smallville's my favorite TV show, like you, but you know, with your podcast being so successful and I thought there was no point trying to compete with yourself. And then, you know, same with Lois and Clark as well. That was another TV show that I liked. But, you know, this is just something that someone hadn't been done before and that I hadn't seen there was much scope out there and stuff like that. And I'm still learning. I'm still changing things up, making things a little bit different. And as I said, it's very hard to do a podcast on your own. So I'm still trying to get, you know, guests and stuff like that. I've had a couple on a couple of months ago, so that was good. But, yeah, still learning, still yeah, you know, trying to get better and and having fun. That's the main part.
For sure, man. And so, yeah, to that point, if people want to find you out there on the internet or your podcast, where can they find you?
Yep. So they can find me on Twitter at TheMWord81. And also my podcast is Superman the Animated Podcast. So that's Sup Animated Pod. I'm also
Sup Animated Pod.
Yeah. Yeah, so I wish now that I wouldn't have created that and just went off my original Twitter feed. You know, so that's something I might do later on down the track. I've also made my own website. So it's themword81.com. That's just little things I put in it. My podcast is on that, but also just little blogs that I've done. Obviously, just being very busy with work and life and stuff like that, so I haven't done as much as what I've liked. So there's a lot of stuff, my interest in a lot of stuff is on there. So, and also on Facebook, you can find me at themword81. So yeah.
All right. Well, as for me personally, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. I'm also the host of another podcast, Franchise Fatigue, where we talk about remakes, sequels, all sorts of movie franchises, and when they get fatigued. You can find us on Twitter at UFPEarth. And I'm also a host of Standard Orbit Trek FM's original series podcast. We talk about all things old and new, Captain Kirk and the Enterprise over there. You can find us on Twitter at Trek FM. As of the podcast here, you can find us on Twitter at Always Smallville with one S. You can find us on Facebook at Always Holding to Smallville. And you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. And finally, if you would like to sit here across from me, much like Nathan has been doing, and bring him some company at level 33.1, you can go to our Patreon at Always Smallville. It was patreon.com/alwaysmallville and join the Patreon. So again, Nathan, thank you so much for your support, man. Much appreciated. You are keeping the lights on over here at Always Sold in Smallville. So
now, very much appreciated, Zach. It was great talking to you again, and I thoroughly enjoy the podcast, and I also love your Patreon as well. I listen to every episode, so I'm always looking forward to your next episode 5.
And I did not make one joke about Australia this entire conversation. I hope you appreciate that. So,
yeah, all good, buddy.
So I will simply say good day, mate. And until next time, always hold on to Smallville.